think it was going to be such a wonderful tune. It sure was.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
Well, my name is Stephen Fuller, and I'm a local fiddler in the Hamilton area. I learned my fiddling in Hamilton, got involved with fiddling about 20 years ago or so, and got involved with a folk club that was starting up in Hamilton at that time, which is still going, and got involved in country dance stuff and different fiddling-related activities.
You stand or sit?
Most of the time when I'm playing, I stand up. It's better to stand up, but sometimes you have to sit. And so then you just have to remember to sit up straight. I started when I was 8 years old, and I actually was a music major until I dropped out, and I stopped playing for many years. And then I got back into it again, like I say, about 20 years ago. Well, the way I think of it is that I left music for a while, but the music never left me. It was always in there wanting to get out, and something, I don't know what made me get back to it, but something made me pick it up again and go through. When I picked it up again, it was just like being a beginner again, except that I could remember that I used to be able to play all these neat things, so it was very difficult. I teach a lot of adults, and adults, the problem with learning as an adult is that you don't have the amount of time available in your life as children do. And so you can't just pick it up and practice always every day, and you have all your adult responsibilities getting in the way of your music all the time. Mm-hmm. I think that's what makes it hard as much as anything for adults. Instruments are very personal, and if you're looking to find a violin to buy, many times you might try 50 or 60 violins before you find one that feels right and sounds right to you. I think that players will try to find the best instrument they can find for whatever money they can afford. And so you can always be finding an instrument that's a little bit better. And I, with myself, that's the way it is. I have an instrument here that I like a lot. It's a fine instrument, but I recently came across one that's a better instrument. And so it's going to become my main instrument. As a student, I think within my first year of playing, I was performing, because the public school system where I grew up had a large music program, and so through that I was certainly performing. And my first teacher made a point of finding performance opportunities for students. So, because he thought it was important to be playing in front of people. I feel I was very fortunate. My first teacher was a very good teacher. When I took from him, he was quite an old man by then, and I was one of his last three or four students. And so I inherited his lifetime of teaching experience. I never found a teacher that I was as comfortable with again after that. There's so much excellent music in all types of music. I think I've enjoyed pretty much everything I've tried. The only thing I can say about that is that many types of music that I've dabbled with, I've never done enough to get good at. But I've enjoyed dabbling with them all. What I play mostly now is traditional music, jigs and reels. Celtic music is the buzzword now for that. The difference between the violin and the fiddle is primarily the music that you play. fiddle music is music of what we call the Celtic music. Music, popular music among ordinary people, basically, was what fiddle music was. And the violin music was the more proper music from the courts and such as it occurred historically. So what I play mostly now is fiddle music, but I also do things like wedding receptions, and I get dressed up in a tuxedo, and I'm a violinist. And I play different music. I play light classical music and things like that. So yes, it's the music. It's the type of music you play more than the instrument. The violin is a good community instrument. It's just a very good universal instrument. You can make all kinds of different music on it. So I do a lot of community dance playing, which is old-time dance that was based on bringing communities of people together. I do quite a lot of that. In fact, I'm going off to do one of those tonight.
My name is May Kay. I was at a dance at Gravener's. Place was packed. And Bill Meeks got up and he said, we're going to play a new tune for you that was just picked up. And he said it was Maple Sugar. And everybody was just, they would hardly let them dance anymore. They wanted to just listen to the music because everybody liked it so much. And that is really good.
So is it one of your favorite songs, you say?
It was the favorite one I have now, anyway. Yeah, Maple Sugar. That, such a funny name. Didn't think it was going to be such a wonderful tune. But it sure was. You know, after they started to play it, it just seemed to go like wildfire. Everybody was playing it. We have a lot of good violin players in Bray Street, but Bill Meeks, of course, was the head of the... he was a good violin player. His brother was a violin player. He played by note, but he wasn't nearly as good a player to dance to as what Bill was, his brother. And that, but... Well, then John Bunn, I don't know, he came down... And he could really play that. So everybody was playing that music. The
tune Maple Sugar was actually written by a guy named Ward Allen, who is a famous old-time Canadian fiddler.
listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
I'm Madeline. I'm going to talk about the different parts of the violin. There's the scroll, the pegs, the sound box, the sound holes, and the chin rest, the strings, the fingerboard, the bridge.
What does the bridge do?
Holds the strings up so it can't go down the wood.
Can you talk a bit about the bow?
Well, there's a frog down there, and the tip, and the bow. I'll play Titty Titty Tata on my finger right here.
There's really two things in caring for the instrument. One that's the most commonly overlooked one is that when you put your bow away, you should loosen the hair to take the tension off the bow, because leaving the bow in tension all the time will warp it out of shape. And the other thing is to just take the violin and take a soft cloth and just clean the rosin off. And just when you're done playing every time, just clean the violin a little bit and keep it clean. And for the day-to-day maintenance of the violin, that's the two most important things. Problems in first learning the violin are learning how to hold it. And that's where everybody has their problems, the proper way of holding the bow and the proper way of holding the violin with the hand. And the problems that you encounter at first are always that people, there's too much tension and people grab things really tight and stuff. And so that usually the first year or more of learning is really just learning how to hold the instrument and trying to get the proper posture on the instrument. I play wherever people will hire me to be there. Very few musicians play only in one place. In fact, I don't know anyone who does. Everybody has to find different jobs here and there, and you'd play wherever you can. I do a lot of small shows. I do quite a bit of weddings and playing for banquets and things like that. And like I say, a lot of community dances. But these occur in all different sorts of places. The dance I'm going to tonight, for instance, is out in the country north of Toronto in a barn somewhere. So that'll be interesting. I've done a number of things like that. Those are usually very nice, very comfortable shows to do. When I'm practicing, I make up melodies all the time. And every once in a while, one of those melodies will stand out to me as being something interesting to me. And then I can take that and make a little tune out of it. So yes, I have probably a dozen or so of my own compositions.
Thank you.
Now, that second tune I played was one that I wrote. It's called Lindsay's Jig. And the way that came about, some friends were over and with some kids, and the place I was living at the time, we had an old tire swing in the backyard, and I was swinging this little girl on the swing, and we were singing to each other. And out of the melody that we created in singing to each other came the tune. So fiddle tunes get, I'm sure lots of music gets written that way, just things that come into somebody's head or some little incident like that comes up and a melody comes out of it and a tune gets written. I guess a lot of my tunes have a bit of a darker flavor to them. Ones like this called Bruce's Tune. This is a memorial tune, I guess, because Bruce Wilkins was a member and helped run the folk club for quite a few years and died of cancer. So that sort of thing happens way too much these days. But another tune I wrote, a number of tunes that I have written have come out of when I was goofing around playing with little, making up little technical exercises for myself or playing around with a particular stylistic thing that I'm working on. So here's a reel called Breakup Reel, which came out of one of those little goofing around things one afternoon. I was just reading a wonderful book by Yehudi Menuhin called Life Lessons, and he must have been a wonderful teacher, still is, I guess. In his book, he points out that every part of the body is equally important, because the way you when you're playing, any part of the body will contribute to the comfort of your playing, or contribute directly to the playing and the actual motions of the playing, but also your posture contributes to how well those motions happen. And so he points out that if you've got a cramp in your big toe while you're playing, it will affect what's happening in your left hand. So every part of your body is important when you're playing. There's no part that is not.
You are listening to Radio Free School.
It was really common that you would do nothing but work on the bow on open strings for maybe a month, 2 months, before you ever made a note on the violin. Just working the bow on open strings, getting the bow to work and rhythm. And I don't know if you can get away with doing that in the modern day, but I do approach all my students in a sense that way, that I work a lot with the bow at the beginning to make so that they can at least make a reasonable sound on it. And I regard that as a little bit of self-defense for me, because the lessons are excruciating if they can't even make a sound with the bow. So the quicker you can get them to at least make a sound with the bow that's something to listen to, then the better off you are. The art of violin making is probably as good right now as it has been for several hundred years. The great masters of the 16 and 1700s created, you know, the wonderful violins that we copy now. But then there was a period of time for 100 years or more where there didn't seem to be any really good violins made. Some good violins, but not of that same really high caliber, like the Stradivarius and the Amatis and the Guarnerius and all that kind of thing. But I think that no one will really know who's living now, because you'd only judge a great violin a couple or 300 years after it was made. But I wouldn't be at all surprised that some of the violins being made in the present day, given that they survive, that there's no huge cataclysm to destroy them, given that they survive for a couple hundred years, will be judged as good as those violins from the late 16, early 1700s. There are a few people. There's a man, last name of Davis, in Toronto, who teaches violin making. But he does, I think, some group classes, and he does occasionally takes on individuals and teaches things. And then there are people who apprentice at some of the larger shops and learn that way through apprenticing system, which is the way that the great makers of the past learned. In the old days, in the 16, 1700s, a young lad would be apprenticed at maybe 7, 8 years old, and then he would learn his craft, and by the time he was in his late teens, early 20s, he could go out as a journeyman maker and start his own business at it. So I've been repairing violins. I have to say that I'm not a trained violin maker or anything like that, but I've been doing good violin repairs for a dozen years now. Every once in a while something comes in, like one that came in last week, that's a violin handed down from the person's mother, I guess, and stayed in the family, but not treated with any particular respect, because they didn't think there was much value to it. But it's made by a really well-known French maker of the late 1800s. The violin turns out to be worth probably $5,000-$6,000. So I called the woman up on the phone, and she just about choked. She had no idea she had an instrument of any value. Since I learned my fiddling in Hamilton here, and Hamilton was a community not necessarily first settled by Scots, but certainly first administered by Scots, and therefore has a very Scottish heritage background, I got involved in Scottish fiddling fairly quickly. So here's some strathspeys. And strathspeys are the only kind of fiddle tune that is particularly Scottish. And they're also supposedly the only thing that we play as a fiddle tune which was actually written on the fiddle. All the other types of tunes, jigs, reels, and all that, existed long before this instrument, the violin, existed. But the strathspey and the violin grew up together, which makes it quite interesting. So here's Lasses Look Before Ye and a strathspey called Neil Gow. Neil Gow was a famous Scottish fiddler from the 1700s. Oh.
myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.